Sully, thanks so much for joining us. Must be a busy week for you. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you know, where you were 50 years ago this week.
Well, on that particular, on the anniversary, on that Friday, I was in the Los Angeles Bureau of Life magazine, where I was the bureau chief. And the news came over the AP ticker, which is, this is pre-internet, and all journalistic organizations said either Associated Press or United Press that brought news from all over the world. And a colleague of mine was standing at the AP teletype machine when the news started spitting out with bells ringing. It was very exciting when something like that happened. And first shots fired in Dealey Plaza or something like that. And I ran, he called to me, and I ran over there to look at it. And it became clear that the president had been shot in some way or another. We had no idea. So I ran back, called New York. No cell phone then either. You had to run into your office and asked, what can we do? And they said, how fast can you get to Dallas? So that same reporter and I and two photographers, an hour later, were on a plane for Texas.
Now, it must have been a mad scene with all of the press going to Dallas. When you got there, what happened? Where did you go first?
Well, it was a mess. I mean, people were carrying these big television cameras in their laps, and on the way, the pilot was keeping us informed. He said there had been an arrest. Somebody named Lee Harvey Oswald of Texas had been arrested. My colleague, Tommy Thompson, turned to me. He was from Texas. He said, I know Texas cops. Let me go after that part of the story, which he did with one of the photographers. And within 24 hours, had a terrific exclusive story on the Oswald family. And Life magazine got two scoops that that weekend. The Oswald family story was one, and the second was the Zapruder film, because as soon as we landed, Tommy went off after the Oswalds. I went in to set up a bureau because other staffers were coming in, and I got a phone call within about an hour from a part-time correspondent that we called Stringers in Dallas. Name was Patsy Swank. She had been at the Dallas police headquarters all afternoon. She'd gone home to feed her children. She got a phone call from another reporter who said he heard from a cop that a businessman, a Dallas businessman, had been out at Dealey Plaza, which was at the end of the motorcade, which is where the president was shot, that he had a movie camera and had photographed the assassination. And needless to say, working for Life then, as I did, pretty electrified by this news, I asked, who was it? And she said, I don't know how to spell the name, but this is how he pronounced it. And she pronounced it Zapruder, precisely, as it was spelled when I then picked up the Dallas phone book and ran my finger down the Z's, and there it was. And I called him. He was out getting the film processed, as I later found out. But I kept calling, and about 11 o'clock, he answered. And I told him who I was and established that, yes, indeed, he had been in Dealey Plaza with his movie camera, and he had photographed the assassination, and he had seen the film. And I said, I asked him, can I come out and see the film now? And he kind of pleaded with me not to do so. And I realized that this poor man had seen a murder
right
that afternoon, and he was a great fan of Kennedy's. He was distraught, exhausted. So I decided at the moment not to push it, which turned out to be a very smart and correct thing to do. So he said to come to his office at 9 the next morning. He had a garment factory, just about a half a block from where the president was killed. And he and I decided I had to start pushing back a little. So he said, come at 9. I got there at 8. And he then, he looked a little startled when I walked in. But he said, I'm about to show the film to two Secret Service agents. And he said, you might as well come in and see it too. So the three of us watched this astonishing piece of film. He ran it about 3 times. And I knew that Life magazine had to get that film.
Now, it's interesting. I wonder if today you would even be allowed in the room there, I mean, with the Secret Service to view that. Was that unusual, do you think, that you could all kind of gather around to watch that?
Tim, Dallas was a city in such chaos at that point that kind of whatever
right.
rules normally applied, the thing that surprised me then, and I have to say still does, is why the cops or the FBI or the Secret Service didn't confiscate the film. I mean, the only reason is this chaos I'm speaking of and the fact that they, by Friday afternoon, they had a suspect. And not just the suspect. I mean, the Dallas cops were saying they were utterly convinced that Oswald, this man, Lee Harvey Oswald, who worked in the building directly overlooking the motorcade, they were convinced that he was guilty. So, but I have to say, you know, I mean, when I saw it with these two Secret Service agents, I mean, why one of them? I mean, we were just, I mean, we knew what had happened. We didn't have a clue as to what it looked like. And suddenly we saw, and particularly the headshot is just, I mean, it's just stomach-curdling. And why one of those guys didn't just reach down and say, Mr. Spruder, I'm sorry, this is evidence of the murder of the President of the United States, and we really need to have this film. What they did, when he did ask the day before, they said, well, it's your film, sir. We would like a copy.
Oh.
Of course, at that point, they had no idea. But this Secret Service, these Secret Service guys suddenly saw this astonishing piece of film. And so, well, if they weren't going to get it, I was damn determined that Life was going to get it. So
that was, so basically, did you reach the agreement right then with him?
No, he had, other reporters did show up at 9, and he had to show it to them. So I just kind of disappeared for an hour, went in and talked to members of his staff and particularly his assistant. It took about an hour for him to show the film. You know, the film is only a few seconds long, and he showed it to each of these 15 or so reporters from print publications. No network television was represented that day, which was another surprise to me. And then after he'd showed it, he got us all together, and he said, well, I know you all want to talk to me, but Mr. Stolle there from Life was the first to reach me, so I feel obliged to talk to him first. And needless to say, my competitors went nuts at that point. But he was determined to do it, and an hour later, I walked out with the film.
Now, is that why you say you think not pushing him too hard the night before was maybe the right move? That
yes.
You got a little, yeah.
I mean, two things. One is that, I mean, I think, thank God, and sort of unbeknownst to me when I was doing it, that I played it the right way. And second, and very important, he trusted Life. And in some cases, he wasn't sure who the other, my competitors out there, you know, whom they represented, and he felt, he kept using the word exploit. He said, I don't want this film exploited. And I think he trusted Life not to exploit it, and he trusted me somehow to convey that message.
Now, of course, since then, that film has become such a part of our kind of cultural memory about that event. I mean, have you been surprised how much of a place it's played in the history of that day?
Totally astonished. I mean, at the time I saw, I knew it was an amazing piece of journalism, is what I knew at the time. I had no idea what other kinds of photographs would show up, and as it turned out, and I didn't know it at the time, it's the only record of the assassination from beginning to end. I didn't know that then, and it was, I mean, it took the passage of years, partly the Warren Commission's reliance on the film to reach their conclusion, the conspiracy industry that began building up to argue with the film. I mean, ironically, the film is the best evidence that exists for the single shot theory, single gunman theory. And at the same time, it's probably the best evidence that exists that there was a conspiracy. I mean, it was that kind of ambiguity that enabled both sides of this growing argument to point to the film that, I mean, you know, within a couple of years, it developed this mythic quality. And if anything, 50 years later, it's that myth is even larger and more pervasive than it was a few years later.
Now, obviously, it's gotten beyond Life magazine at this point, but in terms of how you folks handled it when you first received it, are you happy with how Life handled it and how you went forward with presenting it to the public?
I think Life dealt with it in an extremely honorable way. I mean, we never allowed it to be used. Well, we had it, which is from 63 to 76, while we had the film in our possession, we owned the copyright. We never allowed it to be shown on television or in a movie theater. We printed stills, including the headshot, not the first time, the memorial issue right after the assassination. But after that, as the conspiracy movement began, I mean, we did stories and showed the headshot. We sold some frames to European picture magazines, and we gave, at the time, we gave a few to AP to give so that they would know, they could send it out to newspapers and they'd have some idea of what this film was like. But Life handled it, and we were criticized, abused, I think is the better word, for not allowing it to be shown. And finally, in 1975, Geraldo Rivera showed a bootleg copy on television and, in effect, was daring Time Inc. to sue him and ABC. And at that point, the editors and the executives here, this is enough, and they sold the film back to the Zapruder family for a dollar. We paid $150,000 in 63, and we sold it back to the family for $1. And they then began selling it, to reputable film companies and television. But they did allow it to be used and were paid for it.
Now, obviously today we live in a much different media environment. I'm sure it would have been, you know, very different if you had TV stations and websites and such vying for this. I mean, are there any lessons to be learned from this moment in history about how journalism and you approach this historic moment?
I always hesitate to draw historical lessons, particularly from anything that I've been involved in. But I think, well, let's consider, I mean, if that had happened today, you know, there'd be 400 people in Dealey Plaza with iPhones,
right, sure.
And
yeah.
Cameras and aiming at it. And I've thought about that. And but quite frankly, I'm not at all sure that we'd be any closer to the truth with 400 images of the assassination than now that we have only a single image.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Richard Stulley, I'm sure you have a busy week and want to thank you so much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you for your patience and in waiting to get me on the phone.
No problem.